Acatra Foundation presents The Acatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Acatra AI. Welcome, everyone, back for another deep dive. Today, we're looking at, well, a really foundational text, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about Barack Obama's The Audacity of Hope.
Right. Thoughts on reclaiming the American dream. And this was back in, what, 2006?
Exactly. 2006. He was, you know, a first-term senator then from Illinois.
Just off that huge 2004 DNC speech, that keynote really put him on the national stage.
It absolutely did. Yeah, that really put him on the map. And I think that's precisely why the book and his whole story really still resonates so much today.
Mm-hmm.
What's fascinating is that it isn't just like a political memoir. It's more of a challenge, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, like a call to action.
Sort of. A call to reclaim American democracy, maybe.
Hmm.
He's really pushing us to look past the, you know, the bitter partisan fighting.
And the cynicism that feels everywhere sometimes.
Exactly, the cynicism. He had this core idea, which is actually quite hopeful when you think about it.
Yeah, true.
Well, that underneath all the shouting, the ideological clashes, the cultural stuff, most Americans are actually bound by shared values, shared aspirations.
Things we agree on deep down.
Right. It's just that this common ground gets, well, hidden, obscured by what he called the noise of modern politics.
Which does make you wonder, though, and with the constant culture wars, the 24-hour news.
Yeah.
Is it almost naive to think politics based on reason and empathy is still, you know, possible?
That's a really fair question. And it's one he tackles directly in the book.
And his answer
is a pretty definite yes. But crucially, it's not a naive yes. It's not wishful thinking.
Okay.
He grounds it in this concept he called audacious hope.
Audacious hope.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not passive optimism. Mm. It's described as a courageous, active commitment. A choice, really.
A choice to believe in unity and progress.
Essentially, yes. Even when it seems difficult. He makes this case that we can get past the surface divisions if we actually actively choose to try.
Okay, so let's maybe unpack how he got to that point. His own story seems so key here.
Absolutely essential.
I mean, his background is pretty unique. Son of a white mother from Kansas.
Right.
And a black father from Kenya. That personal story alone just holds so much complexity about race, identity, America.
It really does. It embodies that whole melting pot idea, but with, you know, real texture. And to really get his perspective, you have to look at his childhood, too. Growing up in Hawaii and also Indonesia for a time.
Right. I remember reading about that.
Those weren't just like interesting biographical details. They really gave him this distinctive multicultural viewpoint.
So he saw American identity from both inside and outside, in a way.
I think so, yeah. It shaped his understanding of the American experience as something complex, multifaceted, not just one single narrative.
And then his path after that, his professional journey, is also pretty revealing.
Mm.
Starting out as a community organizer, south side of Chicago.
Yeah.
Seeing those struggles up close.
Right. Very grassroots. Learning from the ground up.
Then, Harvard Law School.
Mm-hmm.
Becomes the first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review, which was a huge deal.
Monumental, yeah.
And then he teaches constitutional law for, what, over a decade?
At the University of Chicago, yeah. Before going into politics.
Illinois State Senate, then the U.S. Senate. It's quite a climb.
It really is. And you can see how this whole journey feeds directly into the book.
How so?
Well, his first book, Dreams from My Father, back in 95, that was very personal. A memoir about identity, his roots.
Right, finding himself.
Exactly. The Audacity of Hope, coming about a decade later, feels like a very deliberate shift.
From personal to public.
Precisely. He's taking all those lessons learned from his unique life, his organizing, his legal background,
mm-hmm.
and applying them directly to the big national challenges. And this is just 2 years before he launches the presidential campaign.
So it's less memoir, more political philosophy.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to put it. Yeah. A declaration.
What always struck me about the book, reading it again, is its ambition. It feels like more than just thoughts. It feels like a blueprint.
That's a really sharp observation.
Was that intentional, do you think? Was he consciously laying out a roadmap for movement?
I think it has to be seen that way, yes. It became a landmark text because it effectively served as the intellectual, the philosophical blueprint for the political movement he was about to lead.
So the ideas in the book directly connect to his later actions.
Absolutely. This wasn't just abstract talk. It was a detailed articulation of how he saw governing, you know, his focus on common ground. That foreshadowed his attempts at bipartisanship later.
Right.
His emphasis on pragmatism over ideological purity, that set the stage for how he approached really complex things like healthcare.
So the book was showing how he planned to put that audacious hope into practice.
Exactly. It operationalized the concept, making it truly foundational for his political identity and, you know, a core part of his legacy.
That blend of grassroots, law, legislation, all coming together in this vision.
Perfectly put.
So if that's the blueprint, what's the driving force? What are the core philosophies, the values really powering this vision in the book?
Yeah. Okay. We can definitely boil his core beliefs down to maybe four or five key ideas that really run through the whole thing.
Okay.
First, and maybe most central, is the search for common ground.
Finding unity in a divided nation.
Exactly. He argues really passionately that there's this urgent need to find that commonality. He insists most Americans, you know, whatever their politics, share core values.
Like family, hard work.
Community, things like that. And he believes political conversation should start there, not from the divisions.
Right. Okay, what else?
Second, there's a real emphasis on pragmatism over ideological purity.
So being practical rather than rigidly sticking to one ideology.
Precisely. He pushed for an approach based on what works, using evidence, being willing to compromise.
Making incremental progress.
Yeah, getting things done, essentially. Not just scoring ideological points. For him, it was about results.
Makes sense.
The number three, huge emphasis on the importance of empathy and dialogue.
Trying to see things from the other side.
Critically important for Obama. He saw empathy really trying to stand in someone else's shoes as almost a moral requirement for genuine compromise, for real dialogue to even happen.
Not just tolerance, but understanding.
Yes, exactly. A deeper level.
Okay, what's next?
Fourth, this is interesting, reclaiming the language of values and faith.
How so?
He specifically challenged progressives. He argued they shouldn't just, you know, give up that powerful language of morality, values, faith exclusively to conservatives.
Because progressive ideas also have moral roots.
Deep roots, he argued. In America's own religious and moral traditions, he saw faith as a potential source of justice.
But it needs to be framed universally.
It needs to be translated into universal values, yeah. So it can resonate widely.
Got it. And the last one.
The heart of it all. Hope is an active, conscious choice.
The audacious hope itself.
Yes. And the key word there is active. For Obama, this isn't just passive optimism like, oh, I hope things get better.
It's work.
It's demanding work. A courageous, almost defiant act, he suggests. A choice to believe in a better future and then to actively, consciously work towards it.
To bend the arc of history, as the saying goes.
That's the idea. He saw that kind of active hope as the fundamental engine that drives democratic progress forward.
That's a really clear picture of his core philosophy. Now, to understand how he maybe arrived at these specific ideas, it helps to look at moments in his life that really shifted things for him.
Pivotal moments, yeah. Turning points.
Those experiences that fundamentally shaped the insights we find in this book.
Definitely. And I think you can point to three moments that were particularly transformative in leading to the audacity of hope.
Okay, what's the first one?
Well, it has to be the 2004 Democratic National Convention keynote address. We mentioned it earlier.
The speech that made him famous overnight, basically.
Pretty much. He delivered this incredibly powerful message of unity. That famous line, no liberal America or conservative America, but one United States of America.
Right.
And what made it transformative wasn't just the speech itself, but the response.
People really reacted to it.
Overwhelmingly. It showed this deep, deep hunger across the country for common ground. And that reaction, Obama said, directly sparked the central question of the book. Is this yearning real? Or is it just naive idealism?
Ah, so the speech response led directly to the book's core question.
Exactly. Yeah. The book became his attempt to answer that, to give substance to that feeling the speech tapped into.
Okay, that makes sense. What's the second turning point?
Going back a bit earlier to his work as a community organizer on the south side of Chicago.
His time on the ground level.
Right. He saw firsthand the struggles, the realities of marginalized communities, but he also learned about grassroots power, about practical problem solving, how change actually happens block by block.
So less theory, more practice.
Very much so. And that was transformative because it grounded his whole understanding of the American system from the bottom up. It gave him this incredibly pragmatic focus on tangible results.
which you see in the book's policy discussions.
Absolutely. It informs his rejection of just abstract ideology. He wants to know what works for people in their actual lives.
Okay. And the third key moment.
This one's maybe less obvious, but really important. His tenure as a constitutional law professor at the University of Chicago.
Teaching law for over 10 years?
Yeah, that wasn't just a job. He was deeply immersed in studying and teaching the philosophical foundations of American democracy.
So a very academic perspective to add to the grassroots one.
Exactly. And that gave him this unique ability to offer a really nuanced take on the U.S. Constitution, which he does in Chapter 3 of the book.
How did he see the Constitution?
Well, he rejected two extremes. He didn't buy rigid originalism, the idea that the meaning is stuck in the 18th century. But he also rejected the idea that it's infinitely malleable, that it can mean anything judges want it to mean.
So somewhere in the middle.
Sort of. He saw it more as a strong, flexible framework, a structure for democratic argument, for compromise. He called it a vessel, strong enough to contain unruly currents.
Meaning it can adapt to changing times while still providing stability.
That's the idea. A living document, but one with real foundations.
Those 3 points, the speech, the organizing, the teaching, you can really see how they weave together into his perspective. So let's bring it to us. What does all this mean for us today? How do his journey, these ideas, connect to our own lives?
That's the crucial question, isn't it? Because it's not just about understanding a political figure. There are real human lessons here.
Things we can relate to.
Definitely. For instance, his whole struggle to find common ground in a polarized America. Well, who doesn't face divisions?
In our families, workplaces, communities.
Exactly. His experience teaches us, maybe warns us, about the cost of letting, as he put it, the demagogues set the terms of the debate.
It's a call to resist that pull towards just staying in our corners.
I think so. Then there's his very honest look at the reality of politics.
He doesn't sugarcoat it in the book.
Not at all. Chapter 4 especially. He talks about the messy business of legislating, fundraising, making compromises. It's not pretty.
Mm.
But the lesson there, I think, is that effective politics needs both. It needs strong principles, yes, but also a willingness to actually engage with messy, imperfect systems to get things done, even small things.
It's kind of a defense of politics as necessary work, not just a dirty game.
A necessary vehicle for public service, exactly. Mm. And then on a very human level, there's Chapter 9, Family.
Right, where he talks about balancing it all.
Yeah, balancing this incredibly demanding public career with being a husband, a father. That struggle is so universal.
That feeling of time poverty he mentions.
Oh, absolutely. That phrase just hits home for so many people, right? Trying to juggle work, family, wanting to make a difference.
While just trying to keep up with daily life.
Precisely. It's incredibly relatable. He connects that personal struggle to broader policy needs, too.
Yeah, he does.
And finally, maybe overarching all of this is his constant return to the power of empathy.
Standing in someone else's shoes again.
It's a constant refrain. And he frames it as a universal call to action. It's not just about changing policies. It's fundamentally about changing hearts and minds.
Which applies way beyond politics.
Any conflict, really. Interpersonal, societal. That capacity for empathy is key.
These are really powerful reflections. Okay, as we start to wrap up this deep dive into the audacity of hope, let's try and distill this down. What are 3 key takeaways you think our listeners should hold on to?
Okay, 3 takeaways. Let's start with an emotional insight.
Okay.
Hope, as Obama defines it here, isn't just a feeling like blind optimism or a vague wish. It's framed as something much tougher, a strategic discipline to act, almost like democratic resilience. It's the emotional commitment to keep engaging, keep working, even when things feel broken or progress seems impossible. Understanding that the process of trying, of participating, matters in itself. It's that defiant choice, audacious, right? To believe we can still strive for something better.
Even when the evidence looks grim.
Especially then. Believing ordinary people can achieve extraordinary things together.
Okay, that's powerful. What about an intellectual insight?
Intellectually, I think the big takeaway is that a healthy democracy doesn't actually require everyone to agree. That's not the goal.
What is that?
The foundation is a shared, fundamental commitment to a process of respectful disagreement.
How we disagree matters as much as what we disagree about.
Exactly. The book really challenges us intellectually to see that our common humanity, those shared values he talks about, are ultimately much stronger, much more real than the ideological differences that get amplified constantly in our political culture. The method of dialogue is crucial.
Right. And finally, a universal insight, something practical maybe.
I think the universal practical lesson pushed by the book is that being a citizen isn't just about voting every few years. It's about the daily conscious effort to cultivate a shared reality.
What does that mean in practice?
It means actively questioning our own information sources, our own bubbles. It means making an effort to seek out and really listen to perspectives we disagree with.
Not to win an argument, but to understand.
To understand, exactly. It's a call to move past cynicism, which is easy, towards active, informed citizenship. And maybe evaluating leaders not just on party, but on their temperament, their demonstrated willingness to actually listen and compromise, that kind of daily practice of civic engagement.
Cultivating shared reality through dialogue. That's a really potent idea to end on. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.